This is MSONewsSports.com, and this is Connections, a chance to meet your North Shore neighbors. News, politics, left, center, right, newsmakers, people, issues, features. Connections on MSO News Sports.
Well, we do connect to locals, of course, here on the North Shore, and others as well. Welcome. Hello, I'm Rick Moore, along with our producer and engineer, Bill Proposke. Bill Newell, of course, the voice of the North Shore, doing so many things for us, and this has been a wild couple of weeks for MSO News Sports as we get our broadcast season in full gear with high school football. Plenty more games coming up this weekend. I'll tell you a little bit about those in just a minute. First, let me tell you who's on today's program. We will be talking with Destination Salem's Executive Director, Kate Fox, who is a frequent guest here on MSO, has been for a number of years, does an amazing job in Salem organizing events and so on, and brochures and information for visitors to the city from within and without, really, from local, from North Shore, and from all over the place. And, of course, major happening next month, actually, I believe it starts right at the end of this month, Haunted Happenings, which has become sort of a national destination point for visitors from all around the country, will be taking place in Salem. Haunted Happenings, and their brochure is out. There's something going on every night, every day in the month of October. But Kate will talk about other things as well, some really amazing exhibits going on right now at the PBD Essex Museum, and she'll talk about those. We'll also chat with Kim Driscoll, the mayor of Salem. Recent events have noticed that the mayoral debates are beginning, city council debates are beginning, and the mayor will be running for another term in the city of Salem. She also has a lot of things to mention about what's going on in the city. And we're going to do something a little different. There's a fundraiser going on, a bit of a fundraiser. It's a weekend show to celebrate a historic Gloucester fishing vessel that will take place at the Gloucester Marine Railways, which is on Rocky Neck in Gloucester. And we'll be talking with the Phyllis A. Marine Association's treasurer, Gloria Parsons. And the Phyllis A. is a historic fishing vessel. I didn't know this. She's going to make a correction on me, but it is actually older than Adventure. And you see the Adventure out there in the harbor now. It's been restored after a historic effort, really, by historian Joe Garland, a famous name in Gloucester and beyond. And Gloria Parsons will tell us about the weekend coming up here with respect to the Phyllis A. Sounds like a fun weekend, and you'll want to listen in on that. And then finally, we'll chat with Heather Atwood of the Two Moms. And Heather, of course, with Nisi Panetta, on the road a couple of times a month. They are doing something historic as well. They are putting together what's called the Midterm Podcast, or MidPod. And what they are doing is they're going to disputed congressional districts, important congressional districts all over the country that are up for grabs between Republicans and Democrats. And what they're doing is they're bringing potluck suppers to the event. They're inviting people in the area. They're inviting the incumbents. They're inviting the challengers to potluck suppers to talk about how to come together as a country. And so Heather will be checking in from Madison, West Virginia today. Okay, so that'll be later on in the program. As we said, we do have football coming up once again starting tomorrow night. We had four games last weekend. We covered Medford, Lynn Classical, Winthrop, Danvers, Beverly, Lynn English, Bishop, Fenwick, Hamilton, Wenham. So we had eight schools we looked at last week, and today we'll be checking into, let me see, and tomorrow rather, to one, two, three, four more schools that we haven't yet covered. So we'll have covered 12 schools in the first two weekends here, and we're pretty happy about that. Tomorrow's games will feature Beverly at Gloucester. That will be a 7 p.m. live streaming video game with Bill Newell and Paul Ingram. They'll be bringing you that one. Beverly at 0-1 after a tough loss last weekend to Lynn English. Come from behind her, almost pulled it out, but didn't. Gloucester winning over at Revere. So Gloucester is 1-0. Danvers and Peabody, that's an interesting matchup. That will be our Channel A game on radio. Marty Smith and Tim Kearns will be bringing you that one. That's a 7 p.m. start. Danvers at 1-0 and Peabody at 0-1. Somerville surprising all of us, beating Peabody last week. So Peabody looks to come back and even its record. So those two games look to be competitive, to say the least. So we'll have both those games tomorrow night on MSO News Sports. On Saturday, it will be Triton at Swampscott, and that game is a noontime start. That will be, I think, with Bill and Tim. I'm not even quite sure about that, as I'm a little loopy right now. But we do have a noontime game, Triton at Swampscott. That will be on Channel A. That's a radio game. That is not a video game. So a lot coming up here on MSO. We will not be broadcasting Trending Now with Josh Arnold tomorrow, for reasons that I won't get into, but we won't be able to do it tomorrow. Josh will be back in a week. So that's what's upcoming here on MSO News Sports, and of course, a lot more to come here right this morning, right now, on Connections on MSO. So certainly hope that you will stay with us. And also, I want to express my appreciation to so many of our sponsors, all of our sponsors, really, in supporting MSO and in supporting what we do here with high school sports events, try to cover all the positive stuff that goes on, as well as cover news and features here on the North Shore. So I appreciate all of our sponsors and advertisers. Many have been with us since the very beginning. We're now beginning, I believe it's our 12th year. It'll be our 12th or 13th Thanksgiving Day. I think it'll be the 13th day, 13th, let me see here. Yeah, it'll be the 13th broadcast of Thanksgiving football on MSO. So we're completing our 12th year. And we couldn't do it without our advertisers and your frequenting these terrific establishments and organizations all over the North Shore. So thank you very much. All right, we'll take a break, come back with our first interview. This is Connections on MSO on this Thursday.
Score early and often this fall with a low-rate residential loan from the Institution for Savings. The Institution for Savings has fantastic rates, low or no fees, great service, and prompt turnaround. Plus, we service our mortgages in-house, so help is always a local phone call away. For more information or to apply online 24/7, visit institutionforsavingsloans.com or call us at 978-462-2344. Institution for Savings, member FDIC and DIF, equal housing lender.
Hi folks, this is Gerard Moynihan of Moynihan Lumber. If you're thinking of replacing the windows in your home, you should look at the Anderson Woodwright double hung insert window, which comes with rich wood interiors in oak, pine, or maple. Quite simply, Anderson is the most trusted window in America. That's why we've been selling them for 57 years. Please see the Anderson Woodwright windows on display at any of our three locations in North Reading, Beverly, and Plastow, New Hampshire, or at MoynihanLumber.com.
Moynihan Lumber, we measure up.
This is Connections on MSONewsSports.com.
Back on Connections now, we're joined by Gloria Parsons, who is a member of the Phyllis A. Marine Association. We'll explain what that is. Phyllis, good morning.
Good morning.
Now tell me a little bit about, first of all, what the Phyllis A. Marine Association is, and then I'll tell you about my association with the Phyllis A., but what is the association itself?
The association is a nonprofit who is responsible for the care and upkeep and restoration of the almost 92-year-old fishing vessel Phyllis A.
Almost as old as me. Okay.
Yeah.
All right. So you are the treasurer of the association. And tell us a little bit about yourself. And we should point out, of course, we're going to get into it a little bit more. But the Phyllis A. is a historic fishing vessel that was homeported in Gloucester for a long, long time. And what's your association with the Phyllis A.? How did you get there?
Well, my husband has been what Joe Garland used to call the ship's doctor.
Ah.
He's been taking care of the work on the Phyllis A. At Gloucester Marine Railway since 1972.
Is that a fact?
Yeah.
Okay, so we should explain to the great unwashed that the Gloucester Marine Railways is the site at which all the fishing vessels were cared for. You pull them up out of the water, put them up on the railways and take care of them. And so your husband, being a doctor, had obviously know a lot about fishing vessels and engines and repair and all that stuff.
Well, he's been doing it for a long time.
Fantastic. Well, now I'll tell you, the Phyllis A. caught my attention. My mom's name was Phyllis Ann, and every time she'd read about the catch, you know, remember back in the day when Joe Garland was roaming the streets here,
The Gloucester Times used to print the catches, how much fish was brought in by these vessels. And my mom would see that. And every time the Philosse was in the paper, she'd say, well, there I am again.
Yeah, it's funny. We have that connection with quite a few people.
Oh, I'm sure.
They'll call or write to me and say, my name is Phyllis A. And there's quite a few of them I've found over the years.
Okay, now the Phyllis A, tell me a little bit about the vessel itself, and there's a little bit about the history. We should point out there's a big fundraiser coming up this weekend over in Rocky Neck that sounds fantastic, and we'll get to that. But can you tell me a little bit about the vessel itself?
Well, the vessel was built in 1925 for Albert Arnulf, who was the leader of a group of 20 men in five little ships that came down from Charleville, Michigan, and brought the entire gillnetting industry to the East Coast in 1910. He had his little boat for a while. He built another one that was loaned to someone and lost on the Anasquam River. So he built another, which is the Phyllis A, named after his oldest daughter, mm-hmm. who is still alive, by the way.
Oh, wonderful.
She was built in Kennebunkport, Maine, but she came, you know, she was a Gloucester vessel, and she fished out of Gloucester for the entire Arnulf family until 2000, so 75 years.
Wow. Yeah, I was going to say,
one port.
I know she was fishing recently. I didn't realize it was that long ago now. So now, where is the Phyllis A? Is it over in Rocky Neck?
She is at the Gloucester Railways at Rocky Neck, up on dry land, with a big hole in her.
Uh-oh.
Doing a lot of work done. We've just received $60,000 from the Massachusetts Cultural Council to help towards the restoration. So that's what we're working on now. And we've gotten two or three grants from the CPA, mm-hmm. the Community Preservation Act from Gloucester. So we have a lot of people on our side and giving us money. So
that's amazing.
It's been slow, but it's coming.
Well, you know, the thing is, I remember when Joe Garland was hyping the Adventure, when Adventure came back to Gloucester all wrecked. And, you know, here we are so many years later, many years later, as a matter of fact. But you see, now the Adventure is a different kind of a vessel. It's a schooner from the 1800s, a fishing vessel. But
she was built. She's a year younger than the Phyllis A.
No way.
She was built in 1926.
Okay. All right, so a different kind of vessel, let's just put it that way, and she cuts yeah. a sleek figure out there, but this is a different boat. The Phyllis A is diesel-powered, is she not?
She is, and she always has been. She never sailed. She carried a steadying sail, but that's all.
Mm-hmm.
But they fished, both vessels fished at the same time, just different methods.
Right.
The Adventure was a trolley, dory trawler, and the Phyllis A was always a gillnetter.
I never knew. Okay, well, that certainly makes sense. Do you know how many crew would be on the Phyllis A most of the time?
When at their high point, there were about six crew members.
Okay, and she has a big hold. I know that she brought in a lot of fish over the years.
She did bring in a lot of fish. For a little vessel, she brought in a lot of fish.
All right, so tell us now about what's coming up this weekend, because this sounds fantastic.
Well, this is something we did last year for the first time, and it went over so well that we decided to do it again, and I think we'll probably be doing it every year from now on. It is an art show and sale, and the art is being exhibited inside the Gloucester Railway building,
mm-hmm.
amongst all of the tools and gear that's been used since Abraham Lincoln was in office to rebuild and work on ships. So it's very interesting for other people to get inside that building to see what has been happening all the years. And having the art hung amongst it is really amazing.
Absolutely. I've been over there many times, of course, but I've never been inside the railways building. And, of course, I know many gentlemen who had careers over there. So it's a fantastic. And it's still an operation, we should say, is it not? It's still servicing vessels.
Oh, absolutely. Two boats up on the rails right now.
There you go. There you go.
The Friendship from Salem has been up for a couple years now.
Uh-oh.
And they're still working on that. Mm-hmm. But they do have a travel lift now that they pull the little boats out of the water and work on them on dry land. But they still have the railways. My husband's one of the last people in the world to know how to run it. And he's always trying to find new people to teach the skill to. But it's unfortunately not too many people interested.
I get that. It gets harder and harder. Well, Gloria Parsons is the treasurer for the Phyllis A. Marine Association, with having a tremendous fundraiser this weekend. And there's no pressure there. Go over there and relax and check out the artists. What will be featured among artists? Paintings, or what will you have in that display?
We have paintings. We have photography. We have some jewelers. We have some quilters.
Mm-hmm.
There's a little bit of everything, I think, really. And don't ask me how many people, because I still get, I just got another message asking if they could participate. So we must be up to 25 or 28 people.
That's great.
Artists on this, for the show this year.
All right, I'm going to give the details in a minute here when we're done with the interview, but it will be Saturday and Sunday in Rocky Neck. That's over at the Gloucester Marine Railways. And I should point out that visitors to the area, there are a couple of fantastic restaurants right there as well, and you can actually dine right on the waterfront. So the weather looks good. It's going to be promising.
I hope so.
All right.
Last year it poured buckets, and we still did very well.
Of course. Of course. It's a fishing industry. You know, we're a seaport.
That's right.
Excellent. Is there anything else, Gloria, you want to mention about the Phyllis A. or the Phyllis A. Association?
Well, we have a website, www.phyllis-a.org,
mm-hmm.
And we'd love you to check out the website and see what's going on. And, of course, we're on Facebook and things like that. But the boat is always there, and if anybody wants to just go down and look at her, or look through her right now, they can.
Oh, through her, yeah, yeah.
Yes.
That's pretty freaky. That's weird. Yeah.
Yeah, we've put about 6 new ribs in her, so we're still working on it.
All
but
right.
It's high and dry, so it's you know, a view that you don't often get of a vessel.
Yeah, it's history still alive. That's tremendous. Well, Gloria, good luck with everything. I appreciate you taking the time this morning, and keep us in the loop. That is Gloria Parsons, who is the treasurer for the Phyllis A. Marine Association. And the Phyllis A. Marine Association Art Show and Sale, featuring works by at least 24 artists and artisans, will take place Saturday, September 16, and Sunday, September 17, from 11 a.m. to 5 p.m. This will be at the Gloucester Marine Railways, 81 Rocky Neck Avenue in Gloucester, right at the end of Rocky Neck. There's plenty of parking in the municipal lot right after you get off of Eastern Point Road, I believe it is, or East Main Street. I think it's East Main Street. Anyway, you go right down to Rocky Neck. There's plenty of parking there in the municipal lot, not so much when you go around the corner. But it's a nice walk along the waterfront. A portion of the proceeds will go to the restoration of the Phyllis A., the oldest former fishing boat in Gloucester. For more information, visit www.phyllis-a.org. And it's a 92-year-old fishing vessel. It does look weird when you can look at the boat out of the water and look right through her hull. But as Gloria was just mentioning, they put some new ribs in it already, and it's a pretty important endeavor for those involved in keeping a bit of the fishing industry alive here in Gloucester. And through Joe Garland's efforts and many, many other people, of course, the Adventure was restored after it was brought to Gloucester back. I think it was in the early 70s or somewhere around there. So, anyway, take that in, and thank you, Gloria, for that nice interview and information. Okay, still to come, we will be chatting with Destination Salem's Kate Fox next. Good Lord willing, and the crick don't rise, and plenty more information this morning here on Connections. So stay with us. We'll be right back. And by the way, you can email us at msonewsports@gmail.com.
Ever wish that help with your business was as nearby as your next-door neighbor? At Cape Ann Savings Bank, we're the folks who have helped our neighbors build prosperous communities since 1846. And we invite you to give us a call, discuss your vision, and learn how we can help you grow your business. We're here for you. You have questions. We have answers. Just give us a call, 888-283-CASB, or visit capeannsavingsbank.com. Member FDIC, DIF, Equal Housing Lender.
Gloucester's Walter Wilkins Insurance Agency is teaming up with Columbia Insurance to deliver a full line of products, personal home and auto policies, as well as a full line of commercial coverage for business owners, including commercial property and commercial vehicle coverage. Wilkins partners with respected companies such as Plymouth Rock, Quincy Mutual, Commerce, and Safeco. For City of Gloucester employees, there are discounts on auto and home policies. Wilkins Insurance is located at 186 Main Street, Gloucester, now partnering with Columbia Insurance, serving the North Shore.
This is Connections on MSONewsSports.com.
This is MSO News Sports, and I'm in the office now of Kate Fox, who is the executive director of Destination Salem.
I was thinking Haunted Happenings, but you're not quite the executive director of that.
Almost.
Okay. Well, the brochure this year is bigger than ever, but let's hold that off for a few minutes. September, I know there were a couple of things this summer that we touched on, and one was Peabody Essex Museum, the ship thing over there, and that's ending up now?
Yep, ocean liners at the Peabody Essex Museum goes through September, closes in early October, and I highly recommend checking that out. It's a great look at the glamour of ocean travel, and people are responding differently to the different exhibits and galleries within the whole exhibit, so I encourage everybody to check it out.
It's an amazing place over there, no matter what is over there at the exhibit. What did you learn this summer? What happened this summer in Salem? Anything that you want to that comes to mind you can touch on in terms of happenings in the city? It was kind of a cool summer, which I imagine is probably a good thing for tourism.
Yeah, it was a great summer. The House of Seven Gables opened their secret rooms, so they have changed their tour for the first time, I think, ever. So people going to the House of Seven Gables have a new experience awaiting. Lots of visitors coming in from all over the Eastern Seaboard, and you know, lots of international travel. Fall always brings the cruise ships as well as, like Gloucester, Salem is on that fall Canada-New England cruise itinerary, so we're looking at a great fall and hope the weather holds out.
How did the rail situation affect business this summer, Kate? I mean, because it was weird with the weekend closings and then Salem being the hub where the trains start and stop and so on for north of Boston. So did that affect the goings on?
It definitely affected visitation coming out of Boston on the weekends, and it was a hassle, but I don't think it was as impactful on the locals as we anticipated. And kudos to the MBTA. How often do we get to say that? But they finished early. They wrapped up early, and so they had train service restored before we expected. It was painful, but we got through, and we're hoping for a really strong fall to make up for it.
Okay, we have, I love this, it's five seasons of Salem, winter, spring, summer, fall, and of course October. That's a different season. We'll get to that in a second. But what's going on this month as we approach the midway mark of September already?
So the September, the Peabody Essex Museum, again, they've got the Kurt Hammett movie poster exhibition. Kurt is the member of Metallica, so he's drawing a whole new audience to the Peabody Essex Museum who want to see his private collection of horror movie memorabilia, and it's a really cool exhibit. I'm not a huge Metallica fan myself, but I really like the graphic arts and the cinema art that is on display. So that goes all the way through October. We also have a new Salem Horror Film Fest that starts in September, and tickets for those films are selling out, so I recommend everyone who's interested in horror cinema check out the hauntedhappenings.org, and salem.org has all the links you would need. And then we go right into Haunted Happenings in October.
I am a Metallica fan, not so much a horror fan, but I would think, I'll have to look at the schedule of movies, because the first movie that just jumped out at me, you know, all those old Hollywood posters in mind, was Alien, the original Alien. And it was supposed to be a science fiction, but it was a horror film. It was brutal.
It was a great movie. And they have an Alien poster in the, there's a whole, they've broken it up thematically in the exhibit, and they do have some science fiction, and I was a big sci-fi person, not necessarily horror.
Yeah, so as I am. Yeah.
And it's definitely worth checking out. And it's so funny because people, like 10 a.m. in the morning, there's a line to get into the Peabody Essex Museum, and it's really the attraction of that Kurt Hammett exhibit.
And when you get there, if you haven't been there before, you will be blown away by the other exhibits that are there, and you will learn things about Salem and about the North Shore that you just had no idea was of such import. It's an amazing place.
It is. It's one of the oldest museums in the country, and they're undergoing an expansion, and while they're under construction, they are pushing right through with a pretty aggressive exhibit schedule. They've got a Georgia O'Keeffe exhibition coming after ocean liners, and there's always something going on. We also have, I just want to mention Trails and Sails as well for people who want to get out and explore the whole region, including Salem. It's run by Essex Heritage, and it's free events the 16th, 17th, and 22nd and 20 through the 24th throughout the region of September. So get out and enjoy the fall and get engaged in our cultural and natural resources.
As we approach now October and haunted happenings, are you breathing a sigh of relief a little bit, or is there a little bit of relaxation because you planned so far ahead, but now the brochure is out and happenings is happening?
There's no sigh of relief, but the brochure is out, and we've launched a new website that's mobile-first design, hauntedhappenings.org, so the calendar of events, everything's on there. There's even a restroom finder. We're irrationally excited about the restroom finder. So there's a lot going on for Haunted Happenings. It starts with the Salem Food Truck Festival, September 30th and October 1st, and full steam ahead.
Oh, my goodness. And I think people are probably, well, I know people are planning their costumes already. Kate, busy time, I know, and I hope you can breathe a sigh of relief here soon. But anything else that you want to mention?
We have our new program for Haunted Happenings this year is Wicked Wednesdays, family fun on Wednesday afternoons, 3 p.m. to 7 p.m., Essex Street, and then throughout Salem. House Seven Gables is doing programming. Sea Shuttle Harbor Tours is doing programming. We're celebrating all of our little monsters. So people who might want to shy away on the weekends, we invite you to Wednesdays in Salem this year. Less traffic, plenty of parking. Come have fun with the kids.
I hope we can talk again during or before, just before, but in the meantime, let's go over one more time the best way to come into Salem, and if you're coming in by POV from the North Shore, what's the best way to manipulate the traffic and parking and so on?
Well, besides Broome, the train. take the train in, especially if you're coming in on the weekends. Midweek is fine. It's perfectly safe. There's plenty of parking, and the traffic is definitely fine. Normal business traffic midweek, but if you're coming on a Saturday or Sunday, even Friday evenings, take the train and save yourself the traffic headache.
That's Kate Fox, Executive Director at Destination Salem with MSO News Sports. I'm Rick Moore. And Destination Salem and Haunted Happenings are married here. Haunted Happenings is actually in their calendar. They have an event for next Friday, and it's all at the Peabody Essex Museum. There are several events at the Peabody Essex Museum. One will be an after-hours party from 6 to 9. It's called Metal Macabre. Metal Macabre. And then there is a Salem Horror Fest opening night at the Peabody Essex Museum. That's from 6 to 9. And then from 9 to 11 at the Peabody Essex Museum, it is the Night of the Living Dead film showing with Ken Foree, Dawn of the Dead. And so that's all next Friday already. And then next Saturday, there's some other stuff going on even before Haunted Happenings officially begins. So it really starts a week from today, a week from tomorrow in Salem. Haunted Happenings, good heavens. And just a reminder that since 1982, Salem Haunted Happenings has evolved into a month-long celebration encompassing everything from family-friendly magic shows to costume balls, psychic readings, haunted harbor cruises, ghost tours, and more. Whether you go to Salem seeking history, spooks, shopping, live music, or even a vibrant food and spirit scene, you're sure to find your own adventure this October at the Halloween capital of the world. You got it. Quite a big bit of a change from 1692, yes? Okay, so we will take a break. This is Connections on MSO News Sports. I'm Rick Moore. Our producer and engineer is Bill Popaski. Still to come, we'll be chatting with Salem Mayor Kim Driscoll and the Mid-Pod's Heather Atwood, all upcoming here on this Thursday. So certainly hope that you'll stay with us.
Fact is, including the commute, people spend 10 hours a day at work. No wonder they're forced to buy car insurance in 15 minutes. They just don't have time to go meet with someone. Well, Columbia Insurance has an alternative. The insurance professionals at Columbia Insurance Agency will meet with you at your workplace. Even better, we'll go to the registry and bring your plates back to you at work, free of charge. At Columbia Insurance Agency, we come to you, and we really do. Visit ColumbiaInsuranceAgency.net and set up an appointment today. That's ColumbiaInsuranceAgency.net.
Compelling exhibits, thought-provoking programs, all celebrating Lynn's past while promoting a vision for its future. I'm Drew Russo, Executive Director of the Lynn Museum and Lynn Arts, and I invite you to visit our campus located in the heart of the downtown Lynn Cultural District with galleries at 590 Washington Street and 25 Exchange Street. Currently, we are featuring the Vision Place of Souls, Civil War landscapes by local artist Jeff Fioravanti through December 22nd at the museum, and rotating shows from local artists in the Lynn Arts Gallery. We're open Tuesdays to Fridays 10 to 4 and Saturdays 9 to 1. Visit us online at lynnmuseum.org. Join us for the 8th annual History and Hops, local beer, food trucks, and more, all to support the Lynn Museum and Lynn Arts. Friday, September 15th, 7 to 10 p.m. at 590 Washington Street in Lynn. For more information, visit lynnmuseum.org.
The Porthole Restaurant is a North Shore dining tradition. Enjoy waterfront dining in a casual atmosphere. The Porthole features outstanding quality, quantity, and price. Known for a full variety of menu selections, you must try the award-winning clam chowder. Fresh off the boat seafood, lobsters, prime rib, steaks and chops, daily luncheon and dinner specials. They feature spacious and well-appointed function rooms. The Porthole, a great value, a great dining experience. Open for lunch and dinner 7 days a week on the water on the Linnway in Lynn.
The following is a paid political announcement from Lynn City Councilor-at-Large, Brian LaPierre.
Since I have been elected, we have made progress. The city is growing, but there is much work to still do. Small businesses are flourishing. We've created local jobs and continue to fight for working families all across Lynn. I have responded personally to over 1,000 constituent requests, but the work doesn't stop there. We need to keep our streets safer and our neighborhoods cleaner. We have to maintain our public services while keeping taxes affordable. The people of Lynn deserve a high level of representation. I am Brian LaPierre, and I'm running for re-election for Lynn City Councilor at Large, and I respectfully ask for one of your four votes on September 12th and Tuesday, November 7th.
Back on Connections, this is MSO News Sports. I'm Rick Moore, along with Salem Mayor Kim Driscoll and Madam Mayor. Summer's over, man. That was quick.
Fall just arrived, right? Great sleeping weather, but I'm still would love a beach day here and now again.
I know. Didn't get all that much, but this is the silly season, and I want to get into that in a bit here. But first of all, one of the things that caught my eye this past week was former Mayor Jean A. Levesque was in the news for I think a good reason, and maybe you could do a little information on that.
Absolutely. We were so happy to be able to break ground on our new Community Life Center, which has been named after Mayor Levesque. He was the mayor who was the steward during urban renewal here in Salem and really did some amazing work in our community that we still reap the benefits of, the beautiful architecture, the pedestrian mall. His connections with the federal government helped secure our community development block grant funds. And this project is something we've been trying to get done for the last 25 years in Salem. It spans numerous administrations, one trying to find a location, trying to put together the resources. We're really, really pleased that a year from now we'll be cutting the ribbon on this beautiful facility named after Mayor Levesque.
Mm-hmm. Sort of sounds a little bit like what's going on in Washington where they're trying to get something moving. But this is what does Community Life Center mean?
So it's a senior center, a place for, certainly for our senior population, services that they rely on like we currently do. Although the Community Life Center movement is one to make sure folks know they can go there when they're 40, when they're 50, when they're 60. The idea of trying to have programming that isn't specifically labeling one group or another. Most of the seniors we talk to don't want to be siloed, don't want to go to a facility that's just for seniors. Oh, okay. And so our goal is if we have programming here that benefits everybody, they'll certainly come down. If you come down when you're 30, you'll come down when you're 70, and it becomes a place that's just a hubbub of activity for seniors.
Well, we were talking in our pregame warm-up about language and about things that are labeled and so on. Do you need to answer that? Because I can pause here. Mm-hmm. So Community Life Center versus Senior Center. And I know the Salem Council, there's so many places I want to go with this, but the Salem Council on Aging has been so fantastic over the years. So a Community Life Center, but that brings me to back to linguistics. And
It is the election season, and there's some really hot button topics associated with language, and one of those is the sanctuary city. We've talked about it before, but in Salem, as within other communities, and maybe even Massachusetts as a state, you would explain it because it's very emotional on either side. But from what I've read about how Salem looks at it, it's just really maintaining status quo.
Yeah, we have a Sanctuary for Peace ordinance that's on the ballot that was adopted by the city council. A group of folks who were concerned about it wanted to put it on the ballot and have everybody vote on it. So every resident in Salem will have a chance to determine whether or not they want to move forward with this ordinance. It is called Sanctuary for Peace, and I think it gives folks the misnomer that it somehow is a sanctuary city ordinance that is going to limit federal funding or create some kind of safety concerns, and it couldn't be further from the truth. I mean, as the mayor, I'm certainly concerned about the budgets, as are the councilors. This ordinance essentially makes sure that any family that's here, and we do have a lot of mixed status families, people who are here without authorization, who are feeling incredible fear, know that they can rely on local services without fear of being deported. So our police chief, our former police chief, both support this ordinance, along with a host of organizations from the YMCA to the Boys and Girls Club to the museum to the hospital to the university. The Salem School Committee unanimously approved this. We know there are kids and families that are hurting, that are feeling fearful, and this ordinance is designed to make sure everybody knows that you don't have to call, you don't have to fear calling the police or dialing 911, and we're going to pick up your trash just the way we pick up everybody else's. And the sort of city services that people rely on at this time when there's so much fear, really, really critical.
Are there things in place, and I want to say maybe resources, if that's the right word, where people who are not really all conversant in English and so on and are worried about things, are there places in the city where they can get some advice?
Yeah, we're supporting a number of organizations. Open Door Immigration Services is one of them that will enable people who have questions, who are looking for guidance. You know, the federal immigration system is just plain broken, and we have folks who are here. Most of the individuals who come to the country without authorization kind of overstay a visa. They're not, you know, being smuggled in for the most part. Mm-hmm. And once you've done that, it's really, really difficult to then get authorization to be here. We have a number of children, students who came here at young ages who qualify for DACA, deferred action for childhood dependents, and they can't get a driver's license or work. So imagine if you have been here since kindergarten and now are going to graduate from high school. All of your peers are getting driver's licenses, getting jobs, thinking about college. You're really limited without this DACA authorization. So that's been the latest kind of pushback. And there's fear and anxiety amongst our immigrant population, and we're hopeful that as a community, we have values here that say if you live here and you're law-abiding and you're a good person, we support you. And that's partly what this ordinance is about.
Salem, to me, seems to be the image that comes to mind is an ornament on a Christmas tree, because there are so many different aspects of the population in Salem. But on the other hand, you know, some of the ornaments are pretty fragile. So how do you look at your tenure in office, Madam Mayor, with all the diversity that is Salem?
Yeah, I think that we're generally a pretty welcoming community and striving to be inclusive at a time frame when more and more people have different backgrounds or are here. And it's not, I think sometimes people think of Salem and we have a largely Latino population in the Point, but we're a pretty diverse place. I've been out campaigning in areas and throughout Salem, and we are a global village. There's no doubt about that. There are people from everywhere who are here. We teach in several different languages, and I think it's something that makes us better. I'm glad to be raising my family in a community where everybody doesn't look the same. There are different income levels. My kids have friends who have two moms or two dads, and it really is here is a place where everybody feels welcome and at home. That's why I'm hoping that this ordinance is something that people will embrace and see it for what it is, which is a chance just to codify our community values into local law. It is a time when also there's a lot of fear at the national level, and there's a lot of rhetoric about what these things mean and what the impact is. I hope voters here are smart enough to kind of see through that and understand that those of us who are in elective office really are in it because we want Salem to be the best place possible.
We talked about service in our pregame warm-up here, and you are you've been serving for a while now, and you're doing it again. This is election season. You have an opponent this time around, and what is it that compels you to want to continue what you're doing?
Yeah, I mean, we have an active citizenry here, and democracy is great. I'm glad that we have an opportunity through an election cycle to sort of talk about what not only what we've done, and that's important, but more importantly, what we want to do. And certainly the things that drive me are wanting to continue to see positive, pressing leadership in our schools. We're really making some good progress. We've got some solid leadership. We've put in place some programs designed to aid both our teachers and our students with support services that they need to be successful, and I want to continue to see that through. We've got some development opportunities along the waterfront with the power plant project. That is a complex project to see transitioning from an old coal-fired plant into a new gas-powered plant, and then there's 45 acres around it, transformational opportunity for our community, but one that we really need to be thoughtful about. It's going to need a strong steward in terms of both permitting and input and guidance to move that forward. And continuing to maintain Salem as a, you know, hip, historic, funky hub of the North Shore that is inclusive and welcoming, and thinking about our housing needs, our transit needs, and trying to have a long-term vision as we approach 2026, our 400th anniversary.
Wow, wow. Yeah, we're getting up there. Gloucester is going to be there in 23.
Yeah, you guys are 3 years older than
That's
us.
Right. Okay, you know, you've been knocking on doors. You've been out shaking hands. I wonder, and this is maybe an unfair question to ask because I didn't talk about it beforehand, but can you relate a recent experience where something, where you've met someone, talked with someone, and it was either something you didn't know or something you were surprised about or something you were upset to hear or glad to hear? Anything you could relate when, you know, meeting people?
I will say that people are pretty enthusiastic. Many of the voters that I'm talking to are excited about some of the changes that they've seen in Salem, the vibrancy. I think that folks are feeling a little frustrated, myself included, around getting from point A to point B. We've got a lot of construction going on, for sure. I think people are super hopeful about using our waterfront as a means to continue our economic resurgence. And for the most part, people are more plugged in than you think. Most people do pay attention however they're getting their information or wherever, you know, they're gathering their thoughts. They do have a pretty good understanding of what's happening and what's going on the ground. If they don't have all the details, you know, we've got representative democracy, which is great, but they have a sense of what's happening, and there's a lot of enthusiasm about Salem's future.
What about you? You just mentioned something, and I know I'm going past my time limit here, but you mentioned information, and I know on a national level there's a tremendous debate about media, but on a local level it seems to me you've got things in place that are trustworthy, and certainly, you know, you've got your local paper, the Salem News, you've got the Daily Item across town there, but you also have a social media, and you're able to put out information. So how do you deal with getting information to your public?
You know, we do have this active citizenry. People want to know what's going on here. I always joke we'd open an envelope and 100 people would show up because they care about the community, you know, so it's a good thing. And I think we've strived to really open things up, be much more transparent and professional in how we operate. So there's not a meeting that takes place that you don't see not only a notice on, you know, on our city website, but if you've signed up for emails, if you want to know, you're going to know what's taking place, what's on the agenda. We really do use social media a lot of the time. We want that input. I mean, this is not a community where we want to do things at midnight when nobody's around. We actually think projects are better. There's usually projects that start out through a development phase, end up changing, sometimes significantly, sometimes minor, but all of that is driven by the input that's coming in from people attending public meetings. So we value it. We look forward to it. Walkthroughs. We've even started doing webinars where you don't have to actually come down to City Hall or City Hall Annex, where you can participate at home with a glass of wine while you were looking at the Forest River Park improvements. And we're going to try and do more of that to engage people where they are, not just have them come to us.
Okay. Well, finally, September and October are very great times in the fall here in New England and in Salem. It's a really particular time. Two things come to mind. Number one, Salem gets to go to the aquarium again.
You got it. September Salem Days as part of the Norman H. Reed Trust are once again supporting Salem families to learn together, to take in opportunities, to enjoy an activity that usually is science-based. It's the New England Aquarium this month. It'll be the Science Museum next month for free. Salem residents can go.
Okay. Do we need to pause here or can I finish up?
Okay.
All right. So, and then the last thing, of course, is, goodness gracious, the Salem Haunted Happenings brochure sits in front of me, and it's about 3,000 pages thick, and I don't know. What are your thoughts coming up?
So we're gearing up for October every year. You know, we know it's a time that folks are coming to Salem to enjoy a little mischievous fun. We want to keep it family friendly. We'll be certainly building off our past success in terms of, you know, having closing ceremonies on Halloween night, encouraging people to take the train. We're exploring some shuttles and some additional sort of event staff to help both shuffle people through the city in a more effective and efficient way. And look forward to it. October's always a fun time in Salem. We're happy when it comes, and we're happy when it goes.
And the trains are running now?
Absolutely.
Okay.
100% trains. There'll be extra trains every weekend in October.
That is Salem Mayor Kim Driscoll with MSO News Sports. I'm Rick Moore.
MSONewsSports.com is known for connecting North Shore sports fans with local sports newsmakers. Features on teams and players, exclusive video interviews following the big games, live event coverage such as high school football, basketball, hockey, and baseball, live video coverage of the Gloucester Fiesta. MSO also connects you to the area news leaders, mayors, state representatives, state senators, town administrators, city and town elected officials, business leaders, and more. Entertainment features. Follow us on Twitter or Facebook at MSO News Sports. Email us at msonewsports@gmail.com. Leave a voice message anytime, 978-325-3638. Stay connected to your North Shore neighbors by simply clicking on msonewsports.com.
Back on Connections now, talking with Heather Atwood, who is somewhere in America. You know, Bob Hope used to do that, somewhere in the West. So where are you today, Heather?
Today, this morning, I am in Martinsburg, West Virginia.
Martinsburg, West Virginia. Okay, so, fill us in. This is part of a project that you do, and tell us a little bit about the project, and then why you're where you are and how you got there.
Okay. The project is called The Midpod. It is a my friend Nisi Panetta had this brilliant idea that she and I, as the two moms, would travel this country for the next year, visiting swing districts, congressional swing districts. So, looking at races that are sort of, you know, up in the air for the midterm elections next November,
okay.
2018 midterm elections.
All right. Now, this is your third visit. Correct?
This is our third visit. We have not yet created a podcast. We were planning on doing three visits to three different congressional districts and then sitting down in the podcast studio, looking at all our interviews, looking at all the stories we collected from these visits, and making three separate podcasts, one for each congressional district. The first district we visited was New Jersey 11, basically Morristown, New Jersey. The second district we visited was Michigan 11, basically a suburb of Detroit. And this week, we are in West Virginia's 2nd Congressional District. And man, is it something.
Okay. Well, tell us a little bit about, now how long have you been there? And when did you get down there?
So, Nisi and I got on a plane in Boston, listen to this, September 11th.
Uh-oh.
We got on the plane in Boston at 7 o'clock in the morning. We landed at Dulles Airport around a little after 8. We got on a plane in Washington, D.C., and flew over the Pentagon around 9:15.
Wow.
And it was moving, I have to say. It was really, apparently the pilot said something, and Nisi heard it, but I was so absorbed in, oh, my gosh, there is the Pentagon. This is the moment.
Yeah.
How did, you know, we all have those reflections these days, this now on September 11th,
yep.
But to be literally flying over the Pentagon at that moment was hard to ignore. You know, it was.
Well, I was at Gloucester High School on the 11th, and I was going for an interview, and I had not seen it in all the years I taught there. And I didn't even know about it. There's a plaque by one of the trees, and the plaque is dedicated to one of our former colleagues who was killed in one of the planes in New York. His name was Jim Trentini. Jim was a gym teacher and a business teacher at the high school and a great guy. But I didn't know the plaque was even there, and I walked on it and looked down. I said, oh, my God, I don't know how I didn't know that. So, yeah, powerful images, Heather, and obviously glad that you're safe and sound, you know.
Oh, yes, all of us, yes.
Okay.
So we flew from D.C. to Charleston, West Virginia. Charleston is the capital of West Virginia. It's in the western end of the state. West Virginia has three congressional districts. The district we're looking at is, I think, the longest district in the country. So it took us yesterday about 6 hours to drive from one end to the other. We drove from Charleston to Martinsburg, so from the western part of the state to the eastern part of the state. And the western part of the state is an entirely different culture. It's not in the district, but the western, southwestern end is where the coal fields are. So being in Charleston, we did have a sense of how coal rules this state, and it really does.
Mm-hmm.
And all the complicated cultural, social, and political issues that come with this coal conversation. So, and then also in that part of the state, there's some really stunning statistics. West Virginia owns some incredible statistics. In that part of the state, there are these four counties, and those four counties have the highest opioid fatalities in the country.
Good heavens.
Yeah. The wow. Charleston Gazette, which is a newspaper, more the a little bit more the liberal newspaper in the state,
mm-hmm.
won a Pulitzer Prize for their coverage of the opioid problem in West Virginia. And wow. in that pocket, it's incredible, right? They're pushing over to Kentucky. So that's one statistic. Another is it has the highest obesity rate in the country. It has the second highest cancer rate in the country, and it has the lowest voting rate in the country. So there are some serious issues here. But having said that, it is one of the most beautiful places I've ever seen. It is just, these Appalachian mountains are absolutely amazing the way they just roll, because they're so much older than the Alps and the Rockies, which have all the jagged peaks. These have been worn down to just be these gentle, gentle, gentle rolling landscapes. And also because the population in West Virginia is so low, the population is just under 2 million. It's about 1,800 million. And so there's just not many people around.
Mm-hmm.
The capital of Charleston is quite pretty, although it looks like it stopped in about 1968.
There's something to be said for that.
Exactly. It actually makes it very appealing.
Mm-hmm.
And, there's some really interesting architecture. The Capitol itself is a beautiful building. But there is nobody around. There was almost no traffic. No traffic. No cars. Very few people walking around. And then when you do this drive across the state through the Appalachian Mountains, you don't see houses. You just see these beautiful mountains. I mean, it is really a beautiful place. And one thing that gets tossed around in this state is, can we please make this a destination for tourists? And as opposed to, simply being a state that generates energy for the rest of the country and the very top few incomes in the state, because it is a beautiful place to visit. It really is. So there's my plug for tourism here.
Well, I got to tell you, you covered so many things, civics, history, geography, geology, pretty cool, and tourism, yeah. I'm looking at a map of West Virginia. My biggest weak point definitely is geography. So, yeah, I'm looking where Charleston is. And now Martinsburg is way across the state to the east, bordering on Maryland almost.
Exactly. Now, and Harper's Ferry is in right over here. So this part of the district absolutely is ruled by, the East Coast, by Maryland and D.C., they're probably it's almost considered a suburb of Washington, D.C. at this point, I think. So it has restaurants. It has, the density. We're in a wonderful little Airbnb right now in a little neighborhood with lots of post-war little brick homes. So it's a very different feel here. There's strip malls and malls just like we see everywhere. You didn't see that in the other end of the state.
Mm-hmm.
So it's... I really recommend people going to Charleston. It is really a beautiful, interesting way lens through that part of America.
Excellent, excellent. Now, all right. Now, what congressional district are you going to be doing your interviews in, or have you done?
Okay, so this is West Virginia's second congressional district. There are three districts. And in Charleston, we interviewed Democratic candidate Callie Sargent. Callie grew up in the district. Or she grew up in West Virginia, I think also in the district. She is just, she is one Southern girl. She is tall and strong and has the West Virginia accent, and she's beautiful, and she comes on bold and put together, and she is a great interview. You would come to West Virginia to interview this woman, Rick. You would love
okay.
her.
Okay, all right.
She was great. So she just announced her candidacy, so watch out for a tally sergeant. And then today we are interviewing Aaron Scheinberg. Now, Aaron Scheinberg, he did not grow up here, but his grandparents grew up here, lived here, and he has a really, he has that familial connection, and he knows West Virginia well, but through the eyes of his grandparents and as a kid visiting. He is an Iraq War veteran and has a very, very significant Iraq War story. He was basically mayor of a region of Iraq. Mm-hmm. Here he is, this young American soldier, and he was put in charge of this area, just trying to manage the troops and the people in the village, and he apparently did a really great job at that. And he is running for office, mm-hmm. running for Congress now. So he has the veterans plug, he's an Iraq War veteran, as I said, and he has that appeal. There are a lot of veterans in this state. He is going to have a bit of a challenge. We really like him, but we haven't interviewed him yet. But he doesn't have the accent, and that West Virginia accent is so beautiful.
Okay.
So lyrical, and it's definitely a bookmark about who you are.
Mm-hmm. Now, I notice looking at the congressional districts in West Virginia, all three representatives are Republicans.
Yes, it's a very Republican state.
So will you be able to interview them? Have you talked with anybody, or are they going to talk with you? I know you haven't had any luck in the last two visits.
Yeah, we still haven't had any luck. The congressman right now for the 2nd District is Alex Mooney.
Mm-hmm.
He basically, got elected, but he has all the same problems that Aaron Scheinberg has. He lived in Maryland most of his life. He was the head of the Republican Party in Maryland. And when this office sort of looked interesting, he just crossed the border and got an apartment and ran for office.
Yeah, and
he doesn't have the accent. He's definitely, he basically, wrote the definition of carpetbagger.
Yeah.
But he did. And, nobody knows who he is. Nobody's ever seen him around here, at least the people we've spoken to. So he's the Washington guy. And these people, it's really interesting because we stopped in a place called Seneca Rock. You should Google the images of Seneca Rock. Okay. It is an incredible geographic formation.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a little country store there that has been there since 1902, owned by the Harper family. It is still owned by the Harper family. Joe Harper was a Republican delegate to the convention. He is, still owns his family's country store. So we stopped there and had lunch and visited with those people, and we interviewed a few people who work in the store, and you get a sense of this incredible West Virginia independence. What do we need Washington for? We're taking care of ourselves.
Mm-hmm.
We're taking care of our own. They just make trouble. There is just this, and you understood when, as my colleague said, you look around at those mountains surrounding this place, and you feel the kind of the combination of isolation and bonding together. They can physically see where they live in this little holler, and they take care of themselves.
Yeah, I'm looking at Seneca Rocks now. Did you walk on that footbridge in the mountains there?
No, we did not. We didn't do
good.
That.
Good. I'm glad. That looks pretty scary.
Yeah, exactly.
Oh man. Well, have you done a potluck? Did you guys do potluck?
Potluck is tonight.
Oh, it's tonight. Okay, very well, very good. And what's on tap for that? Where will that be, and what's that all about?
We're actually hosting it ourselves this time in our Airbnb. Mm-hmm. We have this cute little kitchen. I'm sitting in it right now. And we are having a couple of indivisible West Virginia people coming. Our Airbnb hosts are coming. They're apparently very interested in what we're doing. And we also have a really great thing on this trip. We have James Morrison with us. He's sitting across the table from me, and he has been our sound engineer. So he goes around with a big, fluffy, dead cat microphone.
Okay, yep.
All of us.
Yep.
And is getting some really beautiful sound.
Is he a meat and potatoes guy, or does he like the stuff you like?
Is he
a meat and potatoes guy, or does he like the stuff that you eat?
Yeah, he's not like you. He's like me, so it makes it a lot easier.
Okay, good. Yeah. Very good. Yeah. All right, Heather.
We're making a big bowl of pasta tonight.
Oh, there you go. Well, that sounds good.
Yeah.
All right. It sounds this is fabulous, and I can't wait to hear the interviews, to see what you guys are going to post, and certainly I'd like to meet Jim someday. That's amazing. Now the podcast will be published fairly soon, will they not?
Well, we're still a month away, actually. We're going to come home tomorrow and the next 2 weeks, because we've never actually put together a podcast, so we're going to be getting a lot of help, a lot of assistance, and sitting down, figuring out how to script the whole thing and make it sound beautiful and get some music and all that. So to do three of them, it will take us a couple of weeks.
Oh, yeah.
So just be patient. Thank you very much.
Okay. All right. And again, you have a website that's temporarily, it's getting ready. Give us the contact information where people can go to begin to learn about this.
Sure. It's themidpod.com.
Mm-hmm.
And if you go to that, you just see our landing page. But the fun thing to look at right now is our Instagram page and our Twitter feed. But on Instagram, you see all, you know, we're taking lots of pictures. So you get to see some of these places we're in. And that's really, really fun.
Oh, it sounds great. Oh, Heather, this is so cool. I'm telling everybody about it. And everybody I talk to is just amazed and excited about what you guys are doing. So be safe, get home, and we'll see you next week.
Well, thank you so much for all that support, and we'll see you next week.
All right, Heather, thank you very much. Talk to you later.
Thank you.
Okay, bye-bye.
Bye.
That is Heather Atwood, who was one of the two moms with the midterm podcast, the MidPod. This is MSONewsSports.com. And this has been Connections. Thanks to my guest, Destination Salem's Executive Director, Kate Fox, to Salem Mayor Kim Driscoll, to the Phyllis A. Marine Association's Treasurer, Gloria Parsons, and, of course, Heather Atwood. Thank you all very much, and thank you for listening. Spread the word, msonewsports@gmail.com. Two football games tomorrow night, starting at 7 p.m. here on MSO. That's it for now. For Bill Proposky, Bill Newell, I'm Rick Moore. Bye-bye.